I love writing. I also love reading other people's written words. But life is full. If you are someone who wants to read with your ears so you can do life while you listen, these episodes are for you. Welcome to Erin Reads, an audio version of the Spark and Stitch blog. Beyond Likes and Shares, How to Build Real Self-Esteem. Read by the author, me, Erin Walsh. I can still remember the poster hanging in my fourth grade classroom. Against the backdrop of a star-studded night sky, a comet blazed across the image, accompanied by text that read, "You can be a star." As a child of the 80s, I grew up in the heart of the self-esteem movement. Posters, programs, and books consistently communicated, "If we say you are great, you will feel great about yourself." While self-esteem is a household term today, and it was certainly a household term in the 80s, the concept actually dates back to the 19th century. Renowned psychologist William James was the first to write about self-esteem in the late 1800s, when he defined self-esteem as a set of opinions I have about myself. According to James, these opinions were based on two things, facts, and our emotional response to those facts. Self-esteem was relegated to the professional psychological literature until the 1970s, when the concept entered pop culture and the self-esteem movement was born. A booming industry brought books, curricula, newsletters, retreats, and posters to the public. They all promised to boost kids' self-esteem. Yet many of these programs and exercises were not nearly as effective as promised. This is too bad, given that a recent review of the literature indicates that strong self-esteem is indeed associated with all kinds of positive outcomes for kids and adults. The problem is that the industry was based on a distorted definition of self-esteem. Instead of helping kids build confidence, too many of these programs were built on misconceptions. Let's talk about three of them. Misconception number one is that self-esteem equals feeling good. Now, to be clear, feeling good is great. It just isn't the same thing as self-esteem. Heaping praise and constant adoration on children without taking into account their efforts, experiences, or self-evaluation can actually inadvertently erode children's confidence and actually make them less willing to take on challenges. The second misconception flows from the first one. Once we define self-esteem as feeling good, then stress, challenge, and disappointment must damage self-esteem. Now, let's be clear. Toxic stress isn't good for anyone, especially children. Yet, children learn how to handle appropriate levels of stress and challenge by navigating it. Nurturing a stress-can-be-enhancing mindset can actually build young people's confidence in their abilities. Misconception number three is that we can boost self-esteem through external evaluations alone. There is nothing wrong with telling children that they are stars. Indeed, naming young people's strengths, their gifts, and the value that they bring to this world is essential. Creating positive counter-narratives is especially important for young people whose worth and identities are constantly undermined by negative stereotypes. But words alone as a source of self-esteem are likely to fall short, and they may even backfire. Instead, kids who also have opportunities to build skills, make connections, and grow towards their goals are more likely to have strong self-esteem. I was constantly thinking about my posts and checking in, a young person shared with me recently. It was exhausting, she concluded. It sounds like you're using past tense, I noted. Does that mean things have shifted? Yeah, she said, I'm honestly not sure exactly what happened. Maybe I just got older. Maybe it's because I'm too busy with other stuff to care as much anymore. We went on to chat about what other kinds of activities she was involved in. And based on our very short conversation, it seems like she had finally found a balance between caring about her digital interactions without caring too much about them. This is no small task for her or for any of us. Due to changes in the brain during adolescence, young people's self-concepts become more rooted in the opinions of friends. What peers say to us and how they treat us have an outsized influence on our sense of self during adolescence. Given that many platforms are designed to collect and display social feedback for broad audiences, it's easier during this time period to become preoccupied with other people's opinions. Researchers Jacqueline Nisi and Mitchell Preinstein call this, quote, digital status seeking. They found that young people who put a lot of stock in online metrics and who use various strategies to increase positive online feedback tend to have higher health risk behaviors than their peers. Another study found that teens who put more value on others' user feedback and interactions on Instagram tend to have lower self-esteem. That said, scrolling more passively through other people's profiles comes with its own set of challenges. A recent study found that teens who frequently engage in upward social comparison online tend to have lower appearance self-esteem than their peers. Now, of course, the direction of these influences is unclear, and the relationship between social media and self-esteem is, I'm sure, complex. There are plenty of opportunities to build confidence and self-esteem online, creating and sharing meaningful content, participating in social movements, and building and maintaining friendships can all strengthen young people's sense of self-worth. It is hard for even the most resilient, confident kids to avoid the emotional roller coaster of online feedback entirely. So what to do? It's tempting to try to counteract the emotional roller coaster of social media with lavish praise of our own, or by trying to make our kids happy. But remember, there's nothing wrong with reminding our kids that they are stunning, valuable humans worthy of joy. But trying to boost their self-esteem with our own equivalent of likes, shares, and highlights reel isn't the most helpful move. We can't build our kids up on the same reassurance and status treadmill that brought them down. We can't buy into those same myths of self-esteem. That self-esteem equals feeling good, that stress and challenge and disappointment must damage self-esteem, or that we can only boost self-esteem with external evaluation. Buying into these myths is not going to help them build the real self-esteem that they need to navigate life. So what can we do instead? Number one, we can offer unconditional love. When we present our own affection or positive affirmation as conditional, meaning conditional on their performance, conditional on their identity, conditional on their appearance, we feed into the same trap that encourages status seeking. Instead, we can consistently remind our kids that we love them for all and for everything they are. We can give accurate and realistic feedback about their behavior without calling their self-worth into question. This kind of unconditional love lays the foundation for self-compassion, which is a far more stable antidote to self-criticism than looking for affirmation online or from others. The second thing that we can do is we can validate that this is tough. Telling our kids things like, oh, just don't care about what other people online think of you, is decidedly unhelpful. For starters, caring about what friends think of them is developmentally right on time. This social sensitivity in the adolescent brain is part of what equips them to move out into the world and to find their people. But that doesn't mean it's easy. Instead, we can say, it makes sense that you feel this way. Social media is great for a lot of things, but it can be a tough place to get authentic feedback about what really matters. Another thing we can do is to grow new skills. Learning feels good. We can talk, but growing practical skills is a great way to strengthen self-esteem. Taking a break from the fragile and volatile space of online peer opinion to learn and build new skills is often more helpful than talking ad nauseum about what they're seeing and hearing online. This is not about signing our kids up for activities they have no interest in. It's also not about emphasizing overachievement or superiority as a path to confidence, but focusing on growth. This can include things like working on our three pointers, painting the set for the school play, learning a new language. This often helps young people discover more firm internal footing. As we look for opportunities for our kids to build skills, let's not position all things technology as antithetical to healthy self-esteem. If we are concerned about how their online feedback is impacting them, let's look for ways to build bridges between their interests and opportunities for healthy connections and maybe even digital skill building. This could be participating in some sort of connected camp, learning how to produce their own videos, learning digital photography, or making media art in an after-school program. And finally, we can make sure that we are learning from and not avoiding setbacks, frustration, and challenge. What we know now is that frustration and setbacks don't inherently damage self-esteem. They are actually essential experiences on the road to self-confidence. Young people learn new skills through trial and error, through experimentation, rather than avoiding setbacks. Let's offer support. Let's normalize that setbacks and mistakes happen. And help our kids reflect on the things that they can do to step into a stronger sense of self-worth. When I watch my kids' confidence drop, it's tempting to fill the void, to fill that gap with more words, more opinions, more positive appraisals. Like we said before, these are good times to remind our kids that our love is unconditional now and forever. But sometimes the best way to counteract the self-esteem minefield that comes with growing up online isn't to hang up another poster telling them they can be a star. Instead, let's invite them to design, create, and print a poster themselves. Thank you for listening to Connected and Courageous, the art and science of showing up for kids in the digital age, a podcast brought to you by the Spark and Stitch Institute. This podcast is hosted by me, Erin Walsh. Many thanks to our series producer, Beth Gibbs of Lyft Podcasting. Music is Still Going Instrumental by John Worthy Music. Warm reminder that the Connected and Courageous podcast does not constitute medical advice and is not a substitute for professional mental health advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have concerns about your child's well-being, consult a physician or mental health professional. For notes, resources, and ways to deepen your engagement with Spark and Stitch, visit sparkandstitchinstitute.com. Be sure to subscribe in order to stay up to date with all of the latest offerings. Again, thank you so much for listening. Stay connected, stay courageous.